do deal with fearful people all the time on all different levels, especially on airplanes. And, you know, I'm used to this aspect of human behavior. I got it memorized. You know, the eyes and stuff. You get the stuff. Even in Anglo-Saxon world, as we call it. I lived in Africa so long, I kind of had to relearn Anglo-Saxon, you know, facial expressions and stuff. You know, in Africa, when I walked in villages, and you know that's the first time the kids have ever seen a white man. Can I talk about this? They went, "Hey!" Ran around. In Africa, when you're scared, you act scared, but here it's a little more subtle, or so people think. So I'm used to dealing with fearful people. You know, I know what it is. So this fear, though, I don't take this personally, you know, but when the nafs begins to relax, it's a little more fearful, yeah, because you feel like you're losing it. You know, you want to. You don't quite know. It's called bewilderment. It's actually a legitimate Sufi stage, bewilderment. And you kind of get more fearful because that doesn't feel secure, like what's going to happen. And, you know, you're sort of wondering. But that's all part of the process, yes? The fear and those emotions that come up as you go the path. And a peculiar thing happens. The light, that eternal light, which is love, that's in all of our hearts, called the spark, actually, in Kabbalah, begins to glow so bright that it shines a little beam of light out one of the cracks, right there, of your nafs that's starting to soften up. Bing! That's a light, bing, like that. And it's, you see light. You actually see, you experience light. Some people become light right away. But you just see that famous light that all mystics talk about. And you know that light is, you know, something that you've never seen before. You know, you've never experienced something that's not a part of you. It's a part of God's light called Malakut. And that's infinite, and it's also eternal light. Remember, no beginning, no end. It's Nur ala Nur. It's light upon light. It's Nur al-Anwar. It's the light of all lights. It's Nur al-Samawati wal-Ard. It's the light of all the heavens and the earth, and then some. And then some. It's light, and yet it transcends light. It's not like the light that you know. This is all a result of dhikr. And when you have an experience called tasting or dhok, when your conscious mind registers this experience of pure supernal light, you can be 5 years old, then you can never go back. You never can really go back to the person you were, you know, and sort of unexperienced. You can cover it up, called ghafla, or forgetfulness with the distractions that Pierre Llewellyn was talking about. You can cover it up, but it's still there. I call it the primal experience. Everybody in this room has had a primal experience, or else you wouldn't be here. That's my experience. That's what I know about people that have taught me. You're teaching me right now. That you have had this experience, every one of you. It's still there. It might be buried 70 years back when your mother said, "No, that's not an angel. People can't see angels. Saints see angels." They socialize it out of you, like, okay, don't talk about it. Or you learn not to really mention it. And in company. There was a sheikh in California. He used to say, in church you can believe in angels, but once you start seeing angels, you're out of the church. That's the end of you. You can believe in angels, but once you start seeing them around and saying, wow, look at all the angels, you are so out of that church, or else they'll never put you on the board of trustees, because they don't trust anybody that actually sees angels, I don't think. Well, in Berkeley they do, but those are different churches. They're very liberal. They accept me. So once you see that light in whatever shape it is, it could be baby Jesus, it could be Krishna, it could be just light, however you experience it. That experience, because it comes from the permanent light of God, it is permanent in you. It's called a naksh, by the way. You know, naksh, it's like Naqshbandi, it's an impression in your heart, and it's there. It might be covered up with, I don't know, teenage problems or middle-age crises or something like that, but it's there. It's there. I know it is. You know, it's my sort of job to uncover it and then to go back and affirm it. Affirm it. That's how you start. You remember and then you affirm. So a lot of dhikr Allah, don't forget it actually means remembering, is remembering that experience. You go back to when you were five in the bed and there was a cloud and your ceiling and it opened up, whatever it is, however you did it. You actually remember that. And the murshid's job is to affirm it. Yes, that was real. I don't care what anybody said. Go with it. Build on that experience. Because Westerners have an enormous amount of guilt, right? Guilt trip and victimology seem to be major industries. You know, they almost outstripped the oil industry, but I can't talk about oil because then everybody would get... Imam Bilal was talking about oil and it would be awful. I'm supposed to be not talking about sex and food, though. I'll think of something else. My mind's a blank. Yeah. That's real. Remember it. Value it. Cultivate it. See, you know, the ishara means see what that experience was trying to tell you when you had that experience. You know, it's like dream interpretation, the interpretation of it and the validation of that early, early experience that you've all had or maybe later. That experience is valid. It might not be what you think it is, but it is called waridat, inrushes of light. Even Arabi has a really cool word, waridat, inrushes of light. Outrushes of light, inrushes of light. You know, that light finds a way. When the nafs starts to soften, when it starts to soften, called layyan, a softened heart. A softened heart. Things happen. Things happen. But you have to be in love. You really do. You have to know what love is. It won't happen. This is not mechanics or mechanical engineering. You must be in love. That is the single requirement for a student. Must know love. Called himma, ardent desire, ardent desire. Well, okay, ardent desire I got from the dictionary. What it really means is, although I'm not supposed to talk about sex, it's in the Quran, so you know, it's legitimate, right? Zuleika and Yusuf, you know who that is? One of the great love stories in the Quran. It said she desired him. I guess she was a little more desirous of him, and he desired her. The word is himma. The word the Sufis use for ardent desire, as we say in English, is that kind. And you know how ardent it was? Do I have to spell this out for you? She tore his clothes off? Okay, I won't talk about that. Okay, It's a very hot story. I'm getting hot just thinking about it. Himma. They use that exact word to describe all the desire you have for following the path to the beloved. You have to be in love, ishgala, and you have to stay in love as much as you can until you know love. And when you know love, you'll know it, as I say, forever. In everything, everything. It has no limits. Very scary to be this in love. You see, you have no, like, protection. You have no backup, you know. You're just in love. And you'll be hurt, but hey, you know, it's worth it. Fall in love. Part of my job is a chaplain at a maximum security penitentiary called San Quentin. I'm a nice guy, but it's a very tough environment. And believe it or not, some people get, it's men, some men get married, you know, while they're in prison. This is a side of life I never learned in graduate school in Berkeley, but there you go. And, you know, it's very tough to do. I do marriage counseling, you know. And in that environment, you can imagine what this is, right? Weekend visits, if you get them, and so forth and so on. It's very tough. And part of it, you know, is fine in that situation, that extreme situation of how to stay in love. You see? In that marital situation. Sometimes they get remarried in there, or they stay married and so on and so forth. So that's what I say. Find ways to stay in love. You must do this. Well, it's exactly the same as falling in love with God. In the beginning, very difficult. A few moments of love, then you get tired, right? You find somebody else. Moments of love like this. Thicker high, thicker low. Thicker high, thicker low. I remember one of my dear friends, a Sufi leader, teaches those Sufi dances you've heard about near Tana Blumenstein. And she said that in, I guess it was the 80s, she was teaching dancing full time. So she got, I forget the PC word for mentally challenged citizens. Is that what they say now? Anyways, IQs much lower than the average. They were sort of adolescents. And she said, and she taught them Sufi dancing. Just amazing heart. And she said that there at one point, she learned a lot from them, by the way, about how to do things in the world. She said, Yahai Yahak, which is two names of God. And you say, Yahai Yahak. I don't want to turn this a Sufi dance. Yahai Yahak. And so these kids didn't know Arabic, they didn't know too much about anything else. And so they heard it as, you're high, you're hooked. You're high, you're hooked. You're high, you're hooked. You're high, you're hooked. They said it worked. Everybody's hearts opened and they saw God and it was fine. She said most of the time they were seeing God anyways. They didn't need Sufi dancing, you know. They had to become childlike like that. So in the beginning, you're high and you're hooked. You know, Buddhist meditation, whatever it is, you get high and you're hooked. We know that. That's the business. You know, but after a while, you're high and dry, as we say, you're bored, right? It doesn't work after a while. So what's this poor Sufi to do? Yeah, 30 years of this, 30 years of that, and it's not working. The thing is, in the beginning, there's so much rust on the heart from your wounds, your deep wounds, from your experiences, that when you get a little clean, you're high. Wow, I feel bright and shining and energetic, and there's baraka sizzling the whole room. Yeah? And then you get rusty again. But after you do this for a while, guess what? You get good at it. You get good at it. The mirror starts to get really clean and cleaner and cleaner, and you don't feel it, the contrast, the transformation that much, right? There's sometimes in a very rigorous retreat, lasts a long time, and you stay up for 24 hours doing zikr, your heart gets so clean like a mirror. I've heard Buddhists talk about this too. It's so clean and so shining that before the mote of dust lands on the Sufi heart, which is pure, you can feel it coming. And all you have to do is whew, that much zikr, and you shine the heart. See how subtle this is? It's very, very subtle. It's way beyond your high and your hooked. It works on a level that you're not really used to. You see, it's so subtle that most people are too distracted to even notice that it's working. But it does. It does. And very gently, you make this transition. The eye of the heart opens to see God everywhere. The eye of the ear opens to see, to hear everything. Everything. The whir of that fan in the back, you hear it? That sound is too. That's a divine sound. It's one of the names. If you hear it with the ear of the head, you might hear it with the ear of the heart and know God is everywhere. I thought we wouldn't have time for questions. So, was I right? Oh. Good. See you tonight. Fatiha. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammad wa ala sayyidina Muhammad. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki yawmiddin. Iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in. Ihdina as-sirata al-mustaqim. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. Thank you so much for your kind attention. I really appreciate that. It's been a wonderful opportunity. I'll be looking forward to tonight. Thank you so much.